I read Sir John Davis' Historical Relations Concerning Ireland. None who reads these can wonder that, fruitful as it was always so thinly inhabited, for he makes it plain, 1, that murder was never capital among the native Irish. The murderer paid only a small fine to the chief of his sept, S-E-P-T. 2, when the English settled here, still the Irish had no benefit of the English laws. They could not so much as sue an Englishman. So the English beat, plundered, yea, murdered them at pleasure. Hence, 3, arose continual wars between them for 350 years together, and hereby both the English and Irish natives were kept few as well as poor. 4, when they were multiplied during a peace of 40 years from 1600 to 1641, the general massacre with the ensuing war again thinned their numbers, not so few as 1,000,000 of men, women, and children being destroyed in 4 years' time. 5, great numbers have ever since, year by year, left the land merely for want of employment. 6, the gentry are continually driving away hundreds, yea, thousands of them that remain, by throwing such quantities of arable land into pasture, which leaves them neither business nor food. This it is that now dispeoples many parts of Ireland, of Connaught in particular, which it is supposed has scarcely half the inhabitants at this day which it had 40 years ago. Attack on Wesley's Hat. Tuesday, June 10. I rode to Drummer's Nave, a village delightfully situated. At noon, William Lay, James Claysbrook, and I rode to Carrick upon Shannon. In less than an hour, an esquire and justice of the peace came down with a drum and what mob he could gather. I went into the garden with the congregation while he was making a speech to his followers in the street. He then attacked William Lay, who stood at the door, being armed with a halberd and long sword, and ran at him with the halberd. But missing his thrust, he then struck at him and broke it short upon his wrist. Having made his way through the house to the other door, he was at a full stop. James Glassbrook held it fast on the other side. While he was endeavoring to force it open, one told him I was preaching in the garden. On this he quitted the door in haste, ran round the house, and with part of his retinue climbed over the wall into the garden, with a whole volley of oaths and curses declared, "You shall not preach here today." I told him, "Sir, I do not intend it, for I have preached already." This made him ready to tear the ground. Finding he was not to be reasoned with, I went into the house. Soon after, he revenged himself on James Claysbrook by breaking the truncheon of his halberd on his arm, and on my hat, which he beat and kicked most violently. But a gentleman rescued it out of his hands, and we rode quietly out of the town. Wednesday, September 10th. When I came to St. Ives, I was determined to preach abroad, but the wind was so high I could not stand where I had intended. But we found a little enclosure near it, one end of which was native rock, rising 10 or 12 feet perpendicular, from which the ground fell with an easy descent. A jetting out of the rock, about 4 feet from the ground, gave me a very convenient pulpit. Here, well nigh, the whole town, high and low, rich and poor, assembled together. Nor was there a word to be heard or a smile seen from one end of the congregation to the other. It was just the same the 3 following evenings. Indeed, I was afraid on Saturday that the roaring of the sea raised by the north wind would have prevented their hearing. But God gave me so clear and strong a voice that I believe scarcely one word was lost. Sunday the 14th. At 8, I chose a large ground, the sloping side of a meadow where the congregation stood, row above row, so that all might see as well as hear. It was a beautiful sight. Everyone seemed to take to himself what was spoken. I believe every backslider in the town was there, and surely God was there to heal their backslidings. I began at Zenner as soon as the church service ended. I suppose scarcely 6 persons went away. At 5 I went once more into the ground at St. Ives and found such a congregation as I think was never seen in a place before, Gwynedd excepted, in this county. Some of the chief of the town were now not in the skirts, but in the thickest of the people. The clear sky, the setting sun, the smooth still water, all agreed with the state of the audience. A kind of waterspout. Wednesday the 17th. The room at St. Just was quite full at 5, and God gave us a parting blessing. At noon I preached on the cliff near Penzance, where no one now gives an uncivil word. Here I procured an account from an eyewitness of what happened the 27th of last month. A round pillar, narrowest at bottom, of a whitish color, rose out of the sea near Mousehole and reached the clouds. One who was riding over the strand from Marazon to Penzance saw it stand for a short space and then move swiftly toward her. Till the skirt of it touching her, the horse threw her and ran away. It had a strong sulphurous smell. It dragged with it abundance of sand and pebbles from the shore, and then went over the land, carrying with it corn, furs, or whatever it found in its way. It was doubtless a kind of waterspout, but a waterspout on land, I believe, is seldom seen. Friday the 19th, I rode to Ilocan. We had heavy rain before I began, but scarcely any while I was preaching. I learned several other particulars here concerning the waterspout. It was seen near Mousehole an hour before sunset. About sunset it began traveling over the land, tearing up all the firs and shrubs it met. Nearly an hour after sunset it passed, at the rate of 4 or 5 miles an hour, across Mr. Harris's fields in Camborne, sweeping the ground as it went, about 20 yards in diameter at the bottom, and broader up to the clouds. It made a noise like thunder, took up 18 stacks of corn with a large haystack in the stones whereon it stood, scattered them abroad, but it was quite dry, and then passed over the cliff into the sea. Saturday the 20th. In the evening, I took my old stand in the main street in Redruth. A multitude of people, rich and poor, calmly attended. So is the roughest become one of the quietest towns in England. A tenor story. Sunday the 21st. I preached in the same place at 8. Mr. C. of St. Cubert preached at the church both morning and afternoon and strongly confirmed what I had spoken. At 1, the day being mild and calm, we had the largest congregation of all. But it rained all the time I was preaching at Gwynedd. We concluded the day with a love feast at which James Roberts, a tenor of St. Ives, related how God had dealt with his soul. He was one of the first in the society in St. Ives, but soon relapsed into his old sin, drunkenness, and wallowed in it for 2 years, during which time he headed the mob who pulled down the preaching house. Not long after, he was standing with his partner at Edward May's shop when the preacher went by. His partner said, "I will tell him I am a Methodist." "Nay," said Edward, "your speech will betray you." James felt the word as a sword, thinking in himself, "So does my speech now betray me?" He turned and hastened home, fancying he heard the devil stepping after him all the way. For 40 hours he never closed his eyes or tasted either meat or drink. He was then at his wit's end and went to the window, looking to drop into hell instantly, when he heard those words, "I will be merciful to thy unrighteousness. Thy sins and iniquities will I remember no more." See Hebrews 8:12. All his load was gone, and he has now for many years walked worthy of the gospel. Wednesday, October 22nd. Being informed that some neighboring gentlemen had declared they would apprehend the next preacher who came to Pensford, I rode over to give them the meeting, but none appeared. The house was more than filled with deeply attentive hearers. It seems the time has come at length for the Word of God to take root here also. Friday the 24th. I visited the French prisoners at Knowle and found many of them almost naked again. In hopes of provoking others to jealousy, I made another collection for them and ordered the money to be laid out in linen and waistcoats, which were given to those that were most in want. Saturday the 25th, King George was gathered to his fathers. When will England have a better prince? Many of us agreed to observe Friday the 31st as a day of fasting and prayer for the blessing of God upon our nation, and in particular on His present Majesty. We met at 5, at 9, at 1, and at 8:30. I expected to be a little tired, but was more lively after 12 at night than I was at 6 in the morning. Wesley writes to the London Chronicle, 1761, January, Friday the 2nd. I wrote the following letter to the editor of the London Chronicle. Sir, of all the seats of woe on this side hell, few, I suppose, exceed or even equal Newgate. If any region of horror could exceed it a few years ago, Newgate in Bristol did. So great was the filth, the stench, the misery and wickedness, which shocked all who had a spark of humanity left. How was I surprised then when I was there a few weeks ago? One, every part of it above stairs and below, even the pit wherein the felons are confined at night, is as clean and sweet as a gentleman's house, it being now a rule that every prisoner wash and clean his apartment thoroughly twice a week. Two, here is no fighting or brawling. If any thinks himself ill-used, the cause is immediately referred to the keeper, who hears the contending parties face to face and decides the affair at once. Three, the usual grounds of quarreling are removed, for it is very rarely that anyone cheats or wrongs another, as being sure, if anything of this kind is discovered, to be committed to a closer confinement. Four, here is no drunkenness suffered, however advantageous it might be to the keeper as well as the tapster. Five, nor any whoredom, the women prisoners being narrowly observed and kept separate from the men, nor is any woman of the town now admitted, no, not at any price. Six, all possible care is taken to prevent idleness. Those who are willing to work at their callings are provided with tools and materials, partly by the keeper, who gives them credit at a very moderate profit, partly by the alms occasionally given, which are divided with the utmost prudence and impartiality. Accordingly, at this time, among others, a shoemaker, a tailor, a brazier, and a coachmaker are working at their several trades. Seven, only on the Lord's Day they neither work nor play, but dress themselves as clean as they can to attend the public service in the chapel, at which every person under the roof is present. None is excused unless sick, in which case he is provided gratis, both with advice and medicines. Eight, and in order to assist them in things of the greatest concern, being a sermon every Sunday and Thursday, they have a large Bible chained on one side of the chapel, which any of the prisoners may read. By the blessing of God on these regulations, the prison now has a new face. Nothing offends either the eye or the ear, and the whole has the appearance of a quiet, serious family. And does not the keeper of Newgate deserve to be remembered full as well as the man of Ross? May the Lord remember him in that day. Meantime, will no one follow his example? I am, sir, your humble servant, John Wesley. Saturday, March 14. I rode from Birmingham to Wednesbury. Sunday the 15th, I made a shift to preach within at 8 in the morning, but in the afternoon I knew not what to do, having a pain in my side and a sore throat. However, I resolved to speak as long as I could. I stood at one end of the house and the people, supposed to be 8,000 or 10,000, in the field adjoining. I spoke from, I count all things but loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, Philippians 3:8. When I had done speaking, my complaints were gone. Monday the 16th, I intended to rest 2 or 3 days, but being pressed to visit Shrewsbury and having no other time, I rode over today, though upon a miserable beast. When I came, my head ached as well as my side. I found the door of the place where I was to preach surrounded by a numerous mob, but they seemed met only to starve. Yet part of them came in, almost all that did, a large number, behaved quietly and seriously. Preaching in the Inn Yard, Tuesday the 17th. At 5 the congregation was large and appeared not a little affected. The difficulty now was how to get back, for I could not ride the horse on which I came. But this, too, was provided for. We met in the street with one who lent me his horse, which was so easy that I grew better and better till I came to Wolverhampton. None had yet preached abroad in this furious town, but I resolved with God's help to make a trial, and I ordered a table to be set in the Inn Yard. Such a number of wild men I have seldom seen, but they gave me no disturbance, either while I preached or when I afterward walked through the midst of them. About 5 I preached to a large congregation at Dudley, and all as quiet as at London. The scene is changed since the dirt and stones of this town were flying about me on every side. Saturday, May 2nd, Aberdeen. In the afternoon I sent to the principal and regent to desire leave to preach in the college close. This was readily granted, but as it began to rain, I was desired to go into the hall. I suppose this was fully 100 feet long and seated all around. The congregation was large, notwithstanding the rain, and fully as large at 5 in the morning. Wesley preaches at Aberdeen, Monday the 4th. About noon, I took a walk to King's College in Old Aberdeen. It has 3 sides of a square, handsomely built, not unlike Queen's College in Oxford. Going up to see the hall, we found a large company of ladies with several gentlemen. They looked and spoke to one another, after which one of the gentlemen took courage and came to me. He said, "We came last night to the college close, but could not hear, and should be extremely obliged if you would give us a short discourse here." I knew not what God might have to do, and so began without a delay on God was in Christ, reconciling the world unto himself. 2 Corinthians 5:19. I believe the word was not lost. It fell as dew on the tender grass. In the afternoon I was walking in the library of the Marischal College when the principal and the divinity professor came to me, and the latter invited me to his lodgings, where I spent an hour very agreeably. In the evening the eagerness of the people made them ready to trample each other underfoot. It was some time before they were still enough to hear, but then they devoured every word. After preaching, Sir Archibald Grant, whom business had called to town, sent and desired to speak to me. I could not then but promise to wait upon him with God's leave in my return to Edinburgh. Tuesday the 5th, I accepted the principal's invitation and spent an hour with him at his house. I observed no stiffness at all, but the easy, good breeding of a man of sense and learning. I suppose both he and all the professors, with some of the magistrates, attended in the evening. I set all the windows open, but the hall, notwithstanding, was as hot as a bag nail. Wednesday the 6th. At 6:30, I stood in the college close and proclaimed Christ crucified. My voice was so strengthened that all could hear, and all were earnestly attentive. Wesley's criticism of Edinburgh. Monday the 11th. I took my leave of Edinburgh for the present. The situation of the city, on a hill shelving down on both sides, as well as to the east, with the stately castle upon a craggy rock on the west, is inexpressibly fine. And the main street so broad and finely paved, with the lofty houses on either hand, many of them 7 or 8 stories high, is far beyond any in Great Britain. But how can it be suffered that all manner of filth should still be thrown, even into this street continually?